For South Carolina Public Radio and Sonatas and Soundscapes, I'm Bradley Fuller. Launched in 2013, the Color of Music Festival highlights the impact, artistry, and historical significance of Black classical composers and performers, offering a range of events and concerts each year that span styles, genres, and instrumentations. Now in its 9th season, the festival will once again showcase the talents of musicians of African descent, even as the pandemic continues to pose unique challenges for the performing arts. Recently, I had a chance to speak with Color of Music Festival founder and artistic director Lee Pringle about the origin, mission, growth, and future of the festival, as well as what's planned for 2021. Here's part of that conversation. Lee, really great to have you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The Color of Music Festival had its inaugural season in Charleston here in South Carolina in 2013. And, you know, it's been going every year since then. I was wondering, how long was that first season in the making? Was that something that had always been a dream of yours, or did it come together more quickly?
Actually, the festival was conceived in 2012. And at the time, I was a director on the board of the Charleston Symphony Orchestra, and had had some discussions with the executive director at the time of presenting something that would honor Chevalier de Saint-Georges, who was a contemporary of Mozart. He was actually 11 years older than Mozart. And, you know, the symphony was trying to re-engineer its model after coming out of a very difficult financial period when, back in 2009, 2010, things were critical for most orchestras in America. And it was at that time, the cultural affairs director for the city of Charleston, Ellen Dressler Morrill, I shared with her what we were thinking about doing. I then shared it with the symphony board, and it took me about 6 months to kind of put it all together. We initially were going to have our guest conductor, a native South Carolinian who's now in Baltimore, Joseph Young from Berkeley County, graduate of Goose Creek High School and went to the University of South Carolina and Columbia. But he ended up getting a gig in Brazil at the same time that it was going to debut. And I ended up partnering with someone who's no longer with the festival, Marlon Daniels, who you've performed on your show, some of the works that I partnered with Marlon on. So it took about a year to get it going.
What was the original mission for the festival? Any specific goals or aims that you hoped would be achieved through putting it on?
Yeah, the mission was something that was carefully crafted, and it's still our official mission. And that is to provide distinctive, extraordinary opportunities for composers and the musicians and vocalists of African descent, helping them to present a wide-ranging repertoire of classical music at the very highest musical standard to a diverse audience nationally, internationally, and also to develop our education and community outreach program for families and children and professionals alike. So that's our mission statement, and we're sticking to that. Our community engagement is still very robust, where we have connections with the school districts in the Tri-County area. And also when we have gone to other cities like Nashville, Houston, we've always partnered with the school district in those areas.
So as you were saying, you've expanded from Charleston and gone to other cities now. How many cities in total? Can you name all of them? Or
Yeah, I'll start with try to do the alphabet. So Atlanta was one of our first. We were lucky to present at the historic Sisters Chapel at Spelman College, and also to partner with Emory University and their orchestral program there, and also the historic Clark Atlanta University, which is in the AUC area where a lot of the historic Black colleges in Atlanta reside. That includes Morehouse College and also the college that W.E. Du Bois really got his notoriety early on, and that is Morris Brown College. So we started there. We then ventured into a partnership with Carnegie Mellon University. We presented 6 performances there. In addition to that, we were at Washington, D.C., where we presented at the historic Howard Theater for the Congressional Black Caucus for the opening of the new African-American Arts and Culture Museum in Washington, D.C. on the Mall. We subsequently went to University of Richmond in Richmond, Virginia, where we were hosted by the president of Richmond, the University of Richmond, Dr. Ron Crutcher, who's a phenomenal virtuoso cellist himself. He still concertizes, and he's also the president of a very major institution there. We've also gone to Houston, the University of Houston. We also had the opportunity to present at the historic Emancipation Park Conservancy. It's where Juneteenth got its footing in a historic section of Houston. It's where Beyonce, it's where Felicia Rashad, Debbie Allen, and countless other very noted Houstonians got their roots. And most recently, Nashville at some historic sites there, and also at Allen University in Columbia, South Carolina.
Have you found a certain energy in the performers or maybe the audiences when you're choosing these venues, which have a special meaning, maybe they're HBCUs or other places of historical importance? Does that lend the concerts a different kind of energy or maybe just a special meaning as opposed to, say, just, you know, whatever random concert venue might be open?
Well, I will say having the opportunity to present at Allen University at the historic Chappelle Auditorium, and if your listeners are not familiar with Chappelle Auditorium, I think it was the great-grandfather of Dave Chappelle, who actually visited the site when its rededication took place probably about 5 or 6 years ago. And because I was raised in the African Methodist Episcopal Church, the AME Church, that was probably one of my highlights. And you know, Allen University has a very prescient president that invited us and it hosted us with them, and we partnered with their choral department as well as utilizing their venue to do it. But, you know, presenting in some place, you know, like Nashville, where Fisk University, I say, you know, where Black music started in the continent of North America, Nashville was really a big highlight for us. Nashville has four HBCUs, Fisk, Tennessee State, where Oprah Winfrey attended college, American Baptist College. And most people don't know that one of our premier Black medical schools, Meharry Medical College, is right across the street from Fisk University. So we've had some wonderful experiences, you know, in Nashville.
Yeah, the Fisk Jubilee Singers would have been, I think, yes, super notable group and still performing.
Yes, Dr. Kwame still toured them. In fact, they debuted at the festival, the Color Music Festival, in 2014 at Circular Congregational Church. And it was a sold-out performance. And of course, all the Fisk alum that were in the area made sure that they came out to support that event.
Sure, alumni support. Gotta represent.
Yes.
You've called classical music at least American or European classical music culture, the last water fountain, which, you know, brings to mind images from the Jim Crow era of spaces marked for white only. To extend that analogy, what might taking down the white only sign from above the water fountain that is classical music, what might that look like?
Well, it first looks like, you know, the establishment acknowledging that institutions like the Color Music Festival is a vital part of them maintaining their relevance. But I often say when you play in the same sandbox with the people that you've always played with, your depth of field is limited. And, you know, the mere fact that Color Music started was a very radical statement. And for some people, it made them uncomfortable then and they're uncomfortable now, mainly because we have not made it palatable to make those individuals and institutions feel comfortable. I think the George Floyd incident was a stark awareness to many, and I call it social media advocacy at the time, including CEOs and diversity departments making all kinds of statements. But the reality of it is only a select amount of billionaires and millionaires have made declarative statements of their support for Black institutions. I think people should think about the fact that at all the historically Black colleges in the United States, there's 104 of them, not one of them has a program that focuses on classical instruments. They're very big on choral music and vocal, but that's because no one is invested in it monetarily. So rather than always going to the noted places, and I will say that includes media, where The Post, The Washington Post, The New York Times, and some of these other noted print media, the establishment needs to go to some of these grassroots areas. And, you know, they should put some attention on the historical Black colleges music programs and help lift them up. All the attention goes to the conservatories. That's where the League of American Orchestra has most of their liaisons. And so we're trying to say, hey, look, there are things that you can go to Black institutions to do. Start with institutions like us. There are others. But we're the only one that our sole purpose is on presenting Black classical excellence. You know, the Black community today may not be as in touch with our classical roots as the generations beforehand, because they lived in a segregated world. And so all their classical arts was just the natural thing that permeated in their community. Today, with Black collegians being able to go to just about any school or conservatory that they would like to go to, it is so diluted now. So, you know, I think first, you know, color music has to continue to educate not only the Black community, but the white community also. And I would say that a lot of our, you know, my fellow Black Americans and Black folks in Europe and abroad, you know, we have a history that started with classical music before the spiritual, before, you know, gospel music, R&B. Our history started with classical music on the continent of North America. We had our own indigenous music before we were brought over here by, you know, colonized. So, you know, I'm going to always be the one shaking the cage about, you know, where our roots come from. So I think it's very appropriate that in one of your shows, the tribal triple concerto that was inspired by Alex Haley's roots is one of our favorites when we go to other cities, because it just really personifies that whole feeling of being abstracted, brought to another country, and being oppressed for 400 years. I'm a student of history, and I love delving into things that most people are not aware of. But I'll just use, for example, I just recently saw something on our local ETV television station, which I had seen before, but it kind of refreshed my memory, of Percy Julian, you know, who was a chemist. And Percy Julian invented, through chemistry, so many things, from birth control to arthritis, that the general population globally benefits from. But because he was a person of a time when Black history was not told, everything significant was through the prism of white authority. You know, most people don't know these significant things that come from the Black community. So although I will say for Color of Music, Black history is 12 months a year, I do think that it is appropriate for us to have these moments where we put a magnifying glass so that society can see it a little closer. And, you know, I often say, hopefully there's a sunset provision for what I'm doing, that there will be a need for some institution like ours not to focus on the word Black classical, because maybe things will have changed where you go to any classical arts, ballet, opera, or symphony, and it will be so representative of our society that it would be kind of odd to have colored music. But I just got the feeling, Bradley, that that's not going to be the case anytime soon.
Well, as we're taking that admittedly very slow journey toward that, you know, in the meantime, you do have some seasons planned, some colored music festivals planned, at least one coming up very soon for February of this year, you know, this very month. What all is in store for this music festival? Obviously, the pandemic continues apace, so things are going to look a little bit differently, but you're still putting something on The show is going on, as I think you said. Mm-hmm. What all is in store?
Well, first of all, we had to, you know, go to this virtual concert hall model and, you know, deploy all the CDC protocols to keep musicians safe and for my staff to be safe and the venues that we are using for their folks to be safe. So we've condensed it down. We're using, high power chamber performances. I would start with what I would call the grand dame of those performances, and that is Felix Mendelssohn's Octet with the Color Music Festival Octet, a brilliant assortment of eight musicians who also do some quartet settings for us as well. The Mendelssohn Octet, as some of your listeners may know, is something that he wrote when he was 16 years old with very explicit notes for one of his teachers. And it is still one of the most sought after opportunities for classical musicians who are at that level to perform mutually with others. So that is one of the highlights. We're also featuring the piano, our Ebony and Ivory, where we'll have Kyle P. Walker, who has done a lot of heavy lifting for the festival all over the country, along with Anyango Yarbo Davenport, violinist, who's German, but based in Bogota, Colombia right now. She's a professor there, doing a wonderful arrangement of George Gershwin's Porgy and Bess by Igor Frolov, F-O-R-O-L-O-V. It's called The Fantasy on Porgy and Bess at historic Murray Center, the home of Spoleto Festival USA on George Street. And a young, brilliant composer by the name of Valerie Coleman, who has written many compositions. She's an award-winning member of the Amani Winds, based out of, I think, Jacksonville, Florida is where they're based. She has a piece called Umoja, which we are going to be presenting. And there's everything from Astor Piazzolla's Five Tango for bass, double bass, and violin, to Mozart's, one of his sonatas with piano and violin. So there's a smorgasbord of things starting on February 3rd through the 7th.
Sounds like quite the lineup of chamber music performances there for this year's virtual Color of Music Festival. One final question. You mentioned earlier that ideally, you know, there would be kind of a sunset provision where one day actually the Color of Music Festival, in a sense, wouldn't be needed. But in the meantime, in the future, and maybe even a few years into the future, do you have any plans for growth or how you might expand things, change things a bit? Are there any goals that you have for, say, the next decade?
You know, oddly enough, most people don't know that when I conceived the festival in 2012, it had a 5, 10, and 15-year plan. And this is the power of, you know, if you can conceive something, you can achieve it. We're actually right on target. And there are other classical endeavors that will be from the nucleus of Color Music Incorporated. I won't delve into that right now, but suffice it to say, you know, my goals are for the festival to have representation on every continent where people who are of African ancestry have very little representation in the classical arts. And I can go from the Aboriginal people in the continent of, you know, Australia to, you know, Africa. There's just so many societies that just don't have, you know, anyone that's represented, although they've made so many contributions to the art form. So we're also very close to being out on the West Coast. We were supposed to do it in 2021, but of course COVID came and that changed everything. But an international presence in another state that I'll announce when that's all finalized will be our new journey. But I'm committed to Charleston. I'm committed to South Carolina. It's my home. It's where I was born. And, you know, we're not going anywhere. We're going to stay here in the Lowcountry, and we're going to spread our wings to other places that will support us.
Well, Lee, all best with those longer term goals and also with this year's virtual chamber festival. It's been a real pleasure talking today, and thanks for joining.
Thank you, Bradley. Thank you for having me.
Highlights of a conversation I had with Lee Pringle, founder and artistic director of the Color of Music Festival. For part of its 2021 season, the festival is offering a series of virtual chamber performances February 3rd through 7th, featuring works like Felix Mendelssohn's Octet, Toshiro Mayuzumi's Concertino for Xylophone and Piano, Astor Piazzolla's Five Tangos, and Valerie Coleman's Umoja. More information at colorofmusic.org. That's C-O-L-O-U-R of music.org. For South Carolina Public Radio and Sonatas and Soundscapes, I'm Bradley Fuller.